nonprofits, let's raise more money. For this episode, Jason and Trevor continue their discussion with John Sommervold, the executive director of Tallgrass Recovery. This time, John talks about his role in equipping his team, managing relationships with board members, and making decisions within his mission. Let's get right into it.
When you say, you know, unmanageable, but that also means unmanipulatable. Because
correct.
I see that a lot with executive directors, where the staff gets manipulated by the board for a preconceived agenda other than what the mission of the nonprofit is. And so how did you with that? Because obviously you came into five dysfunctions of a board, all this kind of stuff. We can talk about it all day long. There's all these dysfunctions mm-hmm. that are in every board. So how did you specifically, other than you kind of told us that basically you just pushed them off over here and leave me alone for a while, and they left you alone because, okay, well, we're not having to worry about it. John's got it now. But to get that re-engagement, how did you do that with setting those limits on your board to make sure that they understood? And my point is the board and executive, the board's job is to hire and fire the executive director and raise money. As you said, support the mission. Not to dictate what they do, not to come up with new things for the staff to do, not to have all, it's okay to dreamcast and do all that, but then it comes to the execution. That's the executive director. That's why they're the person to execute it. And a lot of times not executive directors forget that they're there to help to lead the board. I mean, that's the reality. You've got to set the agenda and you've got to help.
You have to be willing to lead the board. And a part of willing to lead the board is you have to see the board as your peers. They're not, it should not be that, you're low caste and they're high caste and they're doing you the favor of letting you have this job.
That's what we think happens a lot.
Yeah. Well, it happens because they go, well, my board, well, I got to take this before the board. I mean, literally they're having executive decisions are being made by board members.
Do you think that's because they're afraid to lead?
No, I think.
Do you think there's fear?
I think it's leading? Because the board has insinuated itself over weak leadership, because there's a vacuum, and so if the executive is not willing to execute, not willing to do that, well then it's a fallback because they don't want to. Well, I don't want to make a decision, and if it doesn't work, well then it's on me.
I think you're exactly right. You know, boards run over out of desperation, weak leadership, because the board presumably supports the mission. When the executive director fails to lead, then the board finds themselves reaching in. And sometimes they're reaching around the executive director, but a lot of times they're reaching in. They see, for example, you hire a new development person who doesn't know anything but happens to be smart and disarming. And then you have a board member who thinks, well, I'll just train her up in how this goes. Well, thank you for the help. But that's not your area of responsibility. So mm-hmm. what you can do is introduce my new development director to your friends with the resources to help our mission. And feel free to give very direct feedback on how those meetings go. But
I love that.
But your role here is to get her in front of people. My role is to make sure that she's equipped to do that when she shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to do that. And it's working very, very well, because you get the right person, you give them three or four principles to work with, and you set them free. So our board is mostly lawyers, bankers, some HR people. There's a healthy bias on our board toward advanced degrees, master's degrees, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. And most of my staff does not have advanced degrees. We hire only from within the recovery community. Every single person at Tallgrass is living in 12-step recovery. And so if your 20s were not spent as an effective member of society, in your 30s, you go out and you actually just get a sale, you get a job, you get a sales job, you start working. And maybe you don't have the several degrees. And so the board is comfortable with education. And so initially, when they started working with some of my staff on events and things, you could see there was hesitation, and you could see that the board, all well intended, but they're taking a step back, like, well, how are we going to do here? Because It doesn't seem it's rough around the edges. And it was. But we have to have enough faith in our people and in our board, just let them get past that. Because when my when the staff has performed and they perform well, then those mm-hmm. things start to subside. But people who join boards are very rarely, you know, sort of blue collar hands on professions.
Because oh no, it's always it's definitely the white collar part of society that you know there's that
yeah because it's guys who have just got their MBA and they're working mm-hmm. at the bank now and the bank says you need to get out in public.
Yep.
You need to get on some boards, you got to support mm-hmm. some things, you got to find a way to be involved. A part of managing the board and managing the staff becomes making sure that they can work together because people are going to do a good job if they're allowed to. Sometimes it takes people a minute to figure that out. But I would say that our board has embraced all of our sort of executive team. About a third of the board are people in recovery. And so it's no, they're not struggling. Even now, the stigma of addiction and alcoholism is strong enough, even on the board to an organization where our mission is to save lives and to restore families, they are still hesitant. You know, it's only been a couple of years. We know. And I think it's just more beautiful when people succeed against expectations. I had a super interesting conversation. I think her name was Rosalind at the seminar. Yeah, she leaned over and she said, so you only hire from within the recovery community? And I said, yes. And she said, do you have trouble finding people to trust that way? And I just looked at her for a second. And she said, never mind. And I said, well, here's the thing. They're the only group of people that I know who are consciously working to improve their character. Step six is to become willing to ask God to remove these defects of character. Step seven is to actually ask God to remove these defects of character, which for some of us meant replace our entire personality. Because my personality was a defect of character.
So much of your identity is wrapped up in that. Yeah.
Oh, it wrapped up in just manipulating people, wrapped up in my inability to feel a connection to someone without having to challenge that. But she leaned across and then she came back a couple minutes later and she said, I shouldn't have said that. And I said, no, it's fine. Because I want the opportunity to say that these people are the people I trust the most. Mm-hmm. And they're my people. I mean, I'm an addict and alcoholic. But it was an interesting conversation because I know that very good person and some of my board members all have the same concerns. Yeah. How far up off the ground are, when you look at your staff, how far up off the ground are they actually? You know, how hard are they struggling? And, you know, we don't hire people the day they get sober. I mean, there has to be a track record.
Right.
Yeah.
But
there's time. Yeah.
Well, what my personal experience is, the people I've been around who can tell you exactly what's going on is another addict. Another addict can look at somebody that's, you know, doing and saying, oh, they got a problem.
That's the whole premise.
They're about to hit the wall and it's coming. And it's real interesting about that.
So human. It's so human.
We're talking about, you know, staff and board, and I specifically want to stick to board members. So when that does come up and you've got that board member that's maybe stepping out of bounds and having that, how specifically do you do that? Do you address that? Have you addressed it? Have those uncomfortable conversations?
I address it very directly and to that board member in person.
I get that impression.
I mean, not aggressively, just directly.
I mean that the best possible way, John, because I don't think you beat around the bush.
I think that's the best policy. That's a thing I would never make a staff person do. If you've got a staff person who starts to sort of get led around by a board member, well, we're going to do this, and it seems like there's some misalignment in what's going on, I go straight to the board member. I say, hey, we need a cup of coffee. Can you come in? We have a beautiful 11-acre campus, and so I like home field advantage. I always invite them out to tall grass, and I'll just say, you know, whatever the thing is. Now, having said that, you know, last year I was wrong. I had a board member and Amanda working hard on this event, and they were right. I thought Tom was, well, he was. He just ran, the first time we brought it up, he just ran me over, and I thought, well, that was interesting, and we'll see how it plays out. And I didn't want to go right back and challenge it right away. And then over the next 3 months or so, I started to see that it was really coming together. And that was my mistake. I underestimated his commitment. I underestimated his influence in the community. I underestimated Amanda. I underestimated Amanda's ability to connect with people at every single level of society. I mean, she's got In our community, there are like 10 guys that every development person has on their top list. Mm-hmm. And she's got them calling her.
Just so everybody's listening. So Amanda is John's director of development. She's so willing to learn, to dig in. She has passion. She is very passionate.
100%.
Yeah. She's got
visceral.
So it's really good.
So we believe in her. That's for sure.
I called my board chair and I said, "Hey, what am I going to do about this? And do you want to be a part of the conversation if I have to finally tell him to back down a bit? Just back down." And she said, "Well, I'll support you anyway. I need to. If you want to meet here, we can. You know, whatever you need." And I said, "Well, let me give it a week or so, and I'll think about it." And so I'm thinking. So I'm trapped. In negativity and in thinking this is something I have to control, which is a terrible idea. And, you know, I ended up having to admit that they were going to succeed. And they had done a thing that I was afraid could not be done, and they were doing it well. So with a board member, every time it's equally as important to question the basis for my reaction as it is to question them, because I was reacting out of my own fear.
So what I hear you saying is, am I reacting out of my own fear and my own insecurity or my own conceived notion, or is this actual data that I'm seeing here and this is real happening?
Yeah. And my lens was very tainted, and I had to admit that about myself. Then the two of them took our organization and our development department to a whole different level. And so, you know, when you're talking about managing your board members, you also have to manage yourself. You have to be willing to continuously examine your own behavior and your own motivations and, frankly, your own fear. So the backstory on that is that I hired a calling. So I used to do financial seminars. We do charitable giving seminars, you know, how to, because you take your family, your values and the government. And when you die, you can support any two. And so we used to do trust seminars and islet seminars and things. And I hired a calling service. I was doing a seminar for an organization where I was on the board. It was the symphony. And I hired a calling service and they had all this data. We had like 60 people coming. The results were absolutely through the roof. And we got there and I stood there with the head of the development committee on the board and the director of development for the symphony and the president of the symphony, and nobody showed up because the calling company didn't call anyone. It makes me sick to my stomach now. And I've never, that was the last seminar I ever attempted. And that was 2009. It was 2009. So that's my response then to events like that was, unless you have a well-established event like the symphony gala, or, you know, the American Cancer Society gala. Unless you have something like that, let's just not. And that was totally on me. Totally on me. We had an absolutely spectacular event. We had a very funny comedian who's in recovery come. And we raised a bunch of money for a first year event.
Well, that's what you said. We raised a whole bunch of money for a first year event. And we didn't have a drop of alcohol. Yeah. We didn't have a drop of alcohol. And, we always sit there and go, holy cow.
Yeah, we do not serve alcohol at our events. If somebody looks like they've got the shakes, we'll tell them the bar is open downstairs. But yeah, we need people to buy things sober, which means that, you know, we really have to drive mission.
Yeah.
We really have to drive the difference that it makes. Yeah. You know, you guys had us do the exercise of trying to get your mission down to 10 words. And our mission statement on our website is long. But the 12 words we settled on are, Tallgrass saves lives and restores families by giving addicts and alcoholics a solution.
I love that.
That's helpful. It's actually going to go on the back. I just ordered business cards with that on it.
Oh.
Where it used to say, we're here because we've been there on my business card, which is a great thing. But that's inside baseball. You know, that's just making us feel good about ourselves. We're here because we've been there.
Yeah.
But your exercise was more important for us because we need to be able to say what we do for them. Not just that we can. We're here because we've been there, as we can do it. Like you said, Jason, you know, one alcoholic can talk to another and get it, which is the whole basis of 12-step recovery. So we're here because we've been there is very, very valuable. You know, we never lose the first three conversations. How do you know how I feel? How do you know this works? How do you know it works here? But we need to be able to have that conversation, which is Tallgrass saves lives and restores families by offering addicts and alcoholics a solution. So
beautiful message, man.
That was valuable. A beautiful message.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We're glad that you did that. Well, John, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
I want to see that business card.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, everybody, do us a favor. If you got anything out of this, if this was beneficial for you, please give us a like. It really helps the ratings go up. Share this with other people in the nonprofit world that need to hear this. We want to bring more people like John. We continue to do this because you guys need to hear it. We keep getting more and more comments and feedback that what we're doing is something good, because we're trying to, as you said, not sell anything. We just want to bring some valuable information. So, John, thank you for coming and sharing your valuable experience share with us, with everybody. So it means a lot.
Thanks very much, brother. Thank you, man. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Give Amanda a hug for us too, will you?
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
We'll see you, John. Take care.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you love our podcast, click the download button, rate us, and follow us on social media at HGA Fundraising. Get out there, start fundraising, and raise more money. See you next time.